Thank you, Matt. And also, I would also like to thank the committee for inviting me to talk. Alzheimer's disease can be characterized by several hallmarks of neurodegeneration, such as senile plaque and neurofibrillary tangle. In the early stage, these pathological changes are first formed in the entorhinal cortex and the surrounding regions. With progression, the pathological change becomes more severe in the entorhinal cortex and further spread into the CA1 region of the hippocampus. At the end stage, pathological change spread almost the entire area of the neocortex. The individual starts to show the clear memory impairment during this middle stage, during which pathological change in the entorhinal cortex becomes severe. The link between the memory impairment and pathological change in the entorhinal cortex does make sense if you look at anatomical connection of the entorhinal cortex with other cortical regions. The entorhinal cortex is a part of the parahippocampal region, which is a major input source and output target of the hippocampus, a brain region that plays a critical role in many forms of long-term memory. This type, in parallel, parahippocampal region are reciprocally connected with many areas of association neocortical areas. These bottom of the anatomical connections are inspired several theoretical models on how the information is transferred within this cortical network. According to these models, memories of daily experience are broken down into the small modules and stored in the association cortices. And these modules are partially bound in the parahippocampal region and further sent to the hippocampus. The hippocampus rapidly binds these modules and encode the conjunction of these modules as a new memory. In this scenario, if the entorhinal cortex becomes dysfunctional because of the accumulating neurodegeneration, the hippocampus may lose access to the information stored in association cortices, which may result in a failure in forming new memories. Consistent with the general idea, previous studies have shown that the damage to the parahippocampal region significantly impairs the formation of the new memory that also depends on the hippocampus. One of such memories is memory acquired in trace Iverling conditioning. Iverling conditioning is a one form of Pavlovian associative learning which requires animal to associate a neutral conditioned stimulus such as tone and aversive unconditioned stimulus such as air puff or electric shock to the eyelid. The trace version of this task has a stimulus-free interval between the conditioned stimulus and unconditioned stimulus. And this temporal gap between two pairs of stimuli makes this simple association dependent on several forebrain structure, including the entorhinal cortex. As you can see here, the selective damage to the entorhinal cortex severely impaired the acquisition of this task, which is measured by the frequency of the anticipatory blinking response immediately prior to the unconditioned stimulus. In parallel, trace Iverling conditioning has been extensively applied to human subjects as well. And one of these studies have shown that Alzheimer's disease patients are also impaired in this simple associative learning. Therefore, trace Iverling conditioning can be a useful model system to study how the degeneration in the entorhinal cortex leads to memory impairment in Alzheimer's disease. As a first step toward this direction, we have been studying how the entorhinal cortex contributes to the formation and expression of this associative memory with intact rat. So far, we have taken two parallel approaches. The first approach that I'm going to talk about today is a behavior analysis on the effect of the reversible inactivation of the subregion of the entorhinal cortex on the expression of this associative memory. And the second approach, using the analysis on the coupling of oscillatory neuronal activity recorded from several cortical regions during the formation and the expression of the memory in trace sampling conditioning. As I have shown in the previous slide, the entrainal cortex is necessary for acquisition of this associative memory. But obviously, the entrainal cortex is not the only site that plays a role in acquisition of this task. Previous studies show that the damage to the hippocampus or prelimbic region of the medial prefrontal cortex severely impaired acquisition of this memory. Immediately following the learning, the expression of the learned response also depends on the hippocampus as well as prefrontal cortex. But with time passes, the hippocampal contribution gradually diminishes, but prefrontal cortex becomes indispensable for the expression of the learned response. However, it remains unclear how the entrainal cortex contributes to expression at either recent or remote time point. And this question will be interesting to ask because that may give us some idea that which cortical region the entrainal cortex may communicate with each with. Another important point to address functions of the entrainal cortex in this memory is which subregions of the entrainal cortex are involved in this task. Both anatomical and electrophysiological studies have shown that the functional dissociation within the subregions of the entrainal cortex. The lateral portions of the entrainal cortex are mainly connected with perirhinal cortex, and the neurons in this region show that the activity that is selective for the particular sensory stimulus that was used in the behavior task. In contrast, medial portions of the entrainal cortex are mainly connected with postrhinal cortex in rodent, and the neurons in this area show the spatially selective activity, which is known as a grid cell. Because the trace sampling conditioning is a purely non-spatial task, we speculate that it's probably the lateral portion of the entrainal cortex may play more important role than the medial portion of the entrainal cortex. In addition, although both regions are equally connected with the hippocampus, the another region that played an important role, that is the prelimbic area of the prefrontal cortex, are more strongly connected with lateral portions compared with medial portions of the entrainal cortex. This also provides a further support for the hypothesis that lateral entrainal cortex may be important for this memory. To test this hypothesis, we have addressed the effect of reversible inactivation of the either lateral or medial portion of the entrainal cortex on the expression of the conditioned response. In this experiment, adult long Evans rats were trained with trace sampling conditioning for 10 days, either 1 day or 1 month after the last acquisition session. The rat received a microinjection of GABA-A receptor agonist Nishimol either into the lateral part of the entrainal cortex or medial part of the entrainal cortex. What I'm showing here is that the spread of the Nishimol that is tagged with fluorescence dye. As you can see, the spread is relatively limited, which enables us to selectively inactivate either lateral or medial portions of the entrainal cortex. What I'm showing here is effect of the reversible inactivation on the expression of the memory measured 1 day after training. As you can see here, inactivation of the lateral entrainal cortex significantly reduced the frequency of the expression of the conditioned response. In contrast, inactivation of the medial entrainal cortex did not have any effect. Furthermore, combined inactivation of both lateral and medial entrainal cortex produced a similar level of the impairment to the one we observed following the inactivation of lateral part alone. This suggests that the lack of effect of the medial entrainal cortex inactivation is not due to the insufficiency of the spread of the drug. When animals were tested 1 month after training, again, inactivation of the lateral entrainal cortex significantly impaired the expression of the memory. In contrast, inactivation of the medial entrainal cortex did not have any effect. Together, These results suggest that the lateral, but not medial portions of the entorhinal cortex plays a long-lasting role in the expression of this associative memory. The importance of the entorhinal cortex at the recent time point is expected because its strong connection with the hippocampus. However, its role in the expression of the remote time point is relatively less characterized. One possibility is that lateral entorhinal cortex may interact with prelimbic area of the prefrontal cortex that play a critical role in the expression of the memory at the remote time point. To test this idea, we have examined the effect of the reversible disconnection of the lateral entorhinal cortex from the prefrontal cortex on the expression of the learned memory, learned information. Interaction between two regions is most likely dependent on the direct anatomical connection between two regions. In the cortex, projection from one region is mainly target on the other region in the same hemisphere. In this case, if you inactivate one side of each region, that effectively eliminate the connection between two regions. And we use this asymmetric inactivation method. We apply this asymmetric inactivation method during immediately prior to the retention test that taking place at 1 day or 1 month following the training. Again, the rats are trained with the trace sampling conditioning for 10 days, and their memory retention was measured either 1 day or 1 month following the training with this asymmetric inactivation method. What I'm showing here is that the effect of the asymmetric inactivation of the medial prefrontal cortex and the lateral entorhinal cortex at 1 month after training. As you can see, the reversible disconnection between two regions significantly impaired expression of the RAND response. Because unilateral inactivation of either medial or lateral entorhinal cortex did not have any effect. This result suggests that the direct connection between the lateral entorhinal cortex and the prefrontal cortex plays a critical role in the expression of the memory acquired 1 month ago. When animals are tested 1 day after training, the same manipulation did not have any effect. These results suggest that the load of the lateral entorhinal cortex during the expression of the remotely acquired memory can be explained by its connection with medial prefrontal cortex. But this interaction between the lateral entorhinal cortex and the prefrontal cortex is only important for memory expansion at the remote time point, but not recent time point. And we speculate that at the recent time point, lateral entorhinal cortex is probably communicate with hippocampus, and ongoing experiment in our lab is now testing at this point. So far, I have shown that the temporal window during which entorhinal cortex may communicate with prefrontal cortex and potentially with the hippocampus. As the next step, we use electrophysiological recording data to address how exactly the lateral entorhinal cortex communicate with other cortical regions during the formation and expression of the memory. One process that is frequently associated with neuronal communication is the synchronization of the oscillatory neuronal activities between two regions. Synchronization of the oscillation can be defined as a strong correlation in phase of oscillations. And this phase synchronization is presumed to coordinate a synaptic input of one region to a target region. This allows for effective information transfer between two regions by bringing them into an excitable state at the same timing. In addition, the phase synchronization also provides an ideal time window for induction of the synaptic plasticity. Once the synaptic connection between two regions are strengthened, this further facilitates communication between two regions. Technically, phase synchronization can take place with oscillations at any frequency range. But we are particularly interested in the synchronization of the theta oscillations because previous study have shown the strong theta oscillation in the hippocampus and the medial prefrontal cortex during trace sibling conditioning. Although animals are not moving around during trace sibling conditioning, previous study have shown the strong theta oscillation in the hippocampus. What I'm showing here is event-related potential recorded from the hippocampus while a rabbit performs trace sibling conditioning. As you can see here, the conditioned stimulus evoked rhythmic fluctuation of the field potential at theta frequency range. The gray line shows the condition during which a rabbit is less likely to show the conditioned response. In this case, evoked theta oscillation is relatively weak. In parallel, another study recorded the field potential from the prelimbic area of the prefrontal cortex, while a cat performs appetitive version of the trace conditioning. And this figure shows the theta-filtered field potential recorded from multiple sites within the prefrontal cortex. The conditioned stimulus not only increases amplitude of the theta oscillation, but also makes several theta oscillations coupled with each other recorded in the multiple sites within the prefrontal cortex. In light of this previous study, we have hypothesized that the lateral entorhinal cortex also shows the theta oscillations, and by coupling its theta oscillation to the theta oscillation in other cortical regions, entorhinal cortex may communicate with these cortical regions. To test this prediction, we have recorded local field potential simultaneously in the hippocampus and the lateral entorhinal cortex and the prelimbic region of the prefrontal cortex during trace sibling conditioning. What I'm showing here is an example of the recorded trace. The gray line shows the actual raw trace, and the black line shows the theta filtered trace. Consistent with the previous study, the presentation of the conditioned stimulus evoked a clear theta oscillation in both hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. In addition, we also found that the clear evoked theta oscillation in the lateral part of the entorhinal cortex. To further examine how these theta oscillations change with learning, first we look at the amplitude of the theta and how it changes with learning. What I'm showing here is that the normalized theta amplitude around the CS onset in the first to tenth day of the acquisition session, as well as the remote retention session that took place 1 month after training. Each row of this image shows that the normalized theta amplitude, and the color indicates the degree to which the theta amplitude increase following the CS presentation, and the red color indicates greater increase. In addition, to examine whether increase in theta amplitude is correlated with behavior, we compare the data during the CR trial, during which the rat showed a conditioned response, versus non-CR trial, during which that did not show the conditioned response. So if any change we observed are different between two conditions, that is a sign that that particular activity is correlated with behavior. During the early stages of acquisition, conditioned stimulus evoked a clear increase in the theta amplitude in the lateral entorhinal cortex in both CR and non-CR trials. But with learning, the CS evoked increase in theta amplitude stayed high in CR trial, and also strong increase was also observed during the remote retention session. In contrast, in non-CR trial, CS evoked increase in the theta amplitude gradually weakened. In contrast, in the hippocampus, we saw the strong increase in the theta amplitude during the early stage of acquisition session, but with learning, the increase of theta amplitude gradually weakened and stayed low during the remote retention session. And we did not see the clear difference between the CR and the non-CR trials. Finally, in the medial prefrontal cortex, we saw the strong CS evoked increase in the theta amplitude in both CR and non-CR trial. But with learning, increase in amplitude stays high during the CR trial, but it's weakened in non-CR trial. And this differential pattern is also observed during the remote retention session. Together, these results suggest that the conditioned stimulus evoked a strong increase in theta amplitude in all of three regions, but this CS evoked increase in theta amplitude is correlated with behavior only in the lateral entorhinal cortex and prefrontal cortex, but not in the hippocampus. As a next step, we examined whether this CS evoked theta oscillation coupled between regions. To examine the coupling or synchronization with oscillation, we look at the correlation in phase between of two oscillations. This figure shows how theta phase are modulated by the presentation of the conditioned stimulus. And here, this is an example of one session. And here, the instantaneous phase is converted to the pseudocolor scale and aligned at the CS onset here. Following the presentation of the conditioned stimulus, theta phase become highly consistent across all the trials in all of the three regions, and subsequently, theta oscillations are strongly entrained about the two oscillation cycles. To examine whether this evoked theta oscillation couple between two regions, we first look at the difference of the phase between two oscillations, and I plotted the distribution of the phase difference between two regions. The left side shows that the phase difference between the entorhinal theta and hippocampal theta. As you can see here, following the presentation of the conditioned stimulus, the peak of the distribution becomes narrower and shifted away from zero. And this is this indicates that the entorhinal theta become more strongly coupled with hippocampal theta following the conditioned stimulus presentation. Then we look at the phase difference between the entorhinal theta and the prefrontal theta. Again, following the presentation of the conditioned stimulus, the peak become narrower and shifted away from zero. This is another sign that entorhinal theta also coupled with prefrontal theta. To further examine this observation, we quantified this degree of synchronization and compared the degree across sessions. What I'm showing here is that the normalized value for the phase synchronization around the CS onset in the first day to the 10th day of the acquisition session, as well as the remote retention session that took place 1 month after training. In this graph, basically the same as a graph for the amplitude, color indicates the degree to which the degree of phase synchronization increased following the CS onset. And also, we compare the degree of phase synchronization in CL trial, shown in left, during which that showed the conditioned response, versus non-CL trial, during which that did not show the conditioned response. Synchronization between the lateral entorhinal cortex and the hippocampus was strong during the early stage of acquisition session in both CR and non-CR trial. But with learning, synchronization stays gradually weakened over the course of the acquisition and stayed relatively low during the remote retention session. The bottom part plot the peak value of the phase synchronization following the CS onset across sessions. As you can see, the general decreasing trend was running, but we did not see the clear difference between CR trial and non-CR trial. Then we look at the synchronization between the lateral entorhinal cortex and the medial prefrontal cortex. We saw the stronger synchronization during in non-CR trial compared to the CR trial at the beginning, but with running, synchronization in CR trial gradually increased and stayed high during the remote retention session. In contrast, in non-CR trial, the degree of synchronization gradually decreased and stayed low during the remote retention session. again, when we plot the peak value of the degree of phase synchronization, we saw the significant difference between the CR and the non-CR trial, both during the acquisition as well as the remote retention session. Together, these results suggest that the entorhinal cortex may change its communication partner from the hippocampus to the prefrontal cortex with learning. When animals acquire new information, the entorhinal theta initially synchronizes with hippocampal theta. This may indicate a close communication between the entorhinal cortex and the hippocampus. Once memory is formed, now the entorhinal theta starts to synchronize with prefrontal theta, and the strength of this communication is strongly correlated with behavior performance. This pattern is generally consistent with what we observed in our behavior study. Together, these results suggest that the communication between the entorhinal cortex and other cortical region play a critical role in both formation and expression of the memory. So far, I have talked about the learning-related change in the theta oscillation, but we are also interested in at examining whether there's any change in oscillation at a different frequency range. And what I'm showing here is a result of the analysis of time frequency analysis on the local filter potential recorded in the lateral entorhinal cortex. And this zero shows the presentation of the conditioned stimulus. And this plot is already averaged across 10 days of acquisition session and averaged across rats. The most noticeable change in this plot is a huge increase in power at the CS onset and almost the entire frequency band. But we also noticed that the power of the oscillation between 30 to 60 Hz band is rhythmically fluctuate following the CS offset. And now this part showed the blow up of that frequency range. And now we saw that this fluctuation is mainly fall into the band between the 35 to 55 Hz band, the band of frequently called as a slow gamma oscillation. And when we plot the average the power between this frequency band, you can see that, as you can see here, the following the big increase of power at the CS onset, you can see the rhythmic fluctuation of the power about 2.5 cycles within the 350 millisecond window. This corresponds to 7 Hz theta frequency range. We also look at the activity in other structure, and we found a similar rhythmic fluctuation in the hippocampus, but as an average plot, fluctuation in the prefrontal cortex was relatively weak. Next, we examine whether this rhythmic fluctuation coupled with local theta phase, we quantify the degree of the coupling between gamma power and the theta phase with several different frequency combinations. And we found that in the lateral entorhinal cortex and the hippocampus, we found the strongest coupling at gamma power at 35 to 45 Hz and theta phase at 4 to 8 Hz. In the medial prefrontal cortex, we saw the generally stronger coupling to the theta at 4 to 8 Hz, but the difference across gamma subband was not that clear. Next, we examined whether this degree of coupling between the gamma power and the theta phase changed with learning. To this end, we separately calculated the data into the two sub-sessions, two group of sessions. The first group is early phase, during which that is the behavior performance still improving. And the second group is late phase, when the animal's performance reaches asymptote. In the lateral entorhinal cortex and the hippocampus, the degree of the coupling between the theta phase and the gamma power did not differ between the early phase and late phase of the acquisition session. In contrast, in the medial prefrontal cortex, we saw that the degree of coupling is higher in the late phase compared with early phase. This may suggest that the coupling between the theta oscillation and the gamma power increase with learning in the medial prefrontal cortex. We also examine whether is there any change in the coupling between the gamma power in one region and the theta phase in the other region. And in this graph, each figure shows that where the theta phase was recorded, and each line shows where the gamma power is recorded. In general, this type of cross-region coupling did not change with learning, but only trend we noticed was this trend that prefrontal gamma become more strongly coupled with entorhinal theta. And this result is consistent with my result I showed in the previous section, showing that the prefrontal theta and entorhinal theta become more strongly coupled with learning. Together, these results suggest that the learning may initiate modification of the prefrontal network, which results in a better tuning of the local gamma oscillation to the theta phase. Gamma oscillations are frequently associated with the spiking of single neurons. In our previous study, we showed that the single neurons in the medial prefrontal cortex encode several different types of information that consist of the episode of the trace event conditioning. For example, some neurons encode association between the conditioned stimulus and unconditioned stimulus, and other neurons show the selective activity to the environment where the conditioning took place. Nested gamma oscillation to local theta oscillation may effectively group these learning-related single neurons activity, and this grouped firing may have a stronger impact on the processing in the downstream target that may include lateral and frontal cortex. In summary, I have shown the four main findings on how frontal temporal cortical network operate during the formation and expression of this associated memory. First, I have shown that the lateral but not medial portions of the entorhinal cortex play a long-lasting role in the expression of this associative memory. Second, I have shown that the entorhinal role in the expression of the remotely acquired memory can be explained by its connection with medial prefrontal cortex. Third, by using synchronization of oscillatory activities as a measure for neuronal communication, I showed that the lateral and frontal cortex initially communicate with hippocampus, but with learning, it started to communicate with medial prefrontal cortex. Finally, we showed that the data on the theta-gamma coupling that may indicate that the lateral and frontal cortex may receive stronger influence of prefrontal spiking activity through effective grouping firing tuned to the local theta oscillations. These results suggest that the communication between the entorhinal cortex and other cortical regions played a critical role in formation and expression of the memory, and we believe that examining the cortical communication in Alzheimer's disease model will be the promising next step to understand the mechanism of memory impairment in Alzheimer's disease at neural network level. We actually started this direction of the study, and I would like to share that as a last topic of my talk. As I showed in the first slide of this talk, in the early stage of Alzheimer's disease, neurodegeneration is specifically formed in the entorhinal cortex. To model this site-specific neurodegeneration, we have used the viral vector approach to genetically modify the neurons in the entorhinal cortex to express excess amount of abnormally phosphorylated tau protein, which is a main component of the neurofibrillary tangle. Within 2 weeks of following the injection of the viral vector into the entorhinal cortex of adult rat brain, we saw a strong signal of the aggregation of the tau specifically in the entorhinal cortex. This model provides us a better spatial and temporal control over induction of the neurodegeneration compared with traditional transgenic model, And we are said to record the neural activity from this neural activity while this rat model performs trace-serving conditioning. And we will examine how the learning-related neural activity that I showed today are altered in this model. Finally, I would like to mention several people who made a significant contribution to the study that I talked about today. Mark Morrissey, Stephanie Tanninen, and Gismar Barrett did a nice work for the behavior study. And Omid Shirakani, who is not in the picture, did analysis on theta-gamma coupling. And also, I'd like to mention Nathan Insel for his contribution to the general discussion. And these are my funding sources. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much for a beautiful set of converging data. I'll let you field the questions for about 10 minutes or so.
This is a promoter is, I forgot the name, but it's a really powerful scheme. I totally forgot, but it's not specific to a particular neuron. It's thank you. Right. Right, right. We tried, for example, Granger causality, but we did not see the clear effect. It may be because our data is pretty short, because interval just 500 milliseconds. So the most of the analysis I applied is I was not confident about the result, so far we cannot tell exactly which region lead, which region lag. Yeah. Right. We did see some, but I didn't present today. But it did not consistently change across sessions. It's not even increase or decrease, it just kind of stays the same. But we did see some coherence between the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex as well. It's dorsal. It's a dorsal campus, and the electrode is below the cell layer of the CA1. Right. So for the reason we recorded from dorsal hippocampus is the previous study showed that if we damage the dorsal hippocampus, the acquisition of this task is impaired. So at least the dorsal hippocampus plays a critical role. But at least, again, but in parallel, there's no study looking at the specific effect of lesion to the ventral hippocampus alone. So it is possible in this task, if we lesion the ventral hippocampus only, that may enough to produce the effect. And in that case, it is interesting to look at the communication between the ventral hippocampus and the preliminary carrier and how it's changed with running. Right. We also look at the fast gamma too, but as when I look at the time frequency plot, we didn't see the fluctuation at the faster gamma range. So that's why we are just focused on the part. We actually saw some change in the wavelet analysis. I did not see the coupling between the theta and the faster gamma in the wavelet analysis. So we did not do that part.
Yeah, you talk about expression
Right.
You emphasize on communication, you know, feedback, all that. But I'm wondering, when you talk about memory, I think that all kind of change to the neural cell, like expression of protein, DNA change, that could be memory as well, right?
Right.
Talk about that. I don't know, is that because of the focus of study or?
It is just the focus of the study. Of course, to see the change in the theta oscillation or any type of neural activity, there should be some kind of molecular or cellular level change. But my study is not looking at that level. We are just looking at behavior and the electrophysiological pattern in vivo.
Okay, so it's very complicated.
Right.
Very complicated.
Right. Have I inactivate other different pathway? No, this is only this connection study I have done so far. Oh, okay. So basically, first we need to know that two regions have a direct anatomical connection between two regions, between them. And inactivate one side, for example, right side of the one region, and combine with the inactivation of the left side of the other region. And in this case, the connection, direct connection between them are cut, virtually cut, but at least the half of the each area remains intact. So that's how we do to eliminate the direct anatomical connection between them.
I'm very intrigued by the kind of connection you hinted at of your previous study in science and this idea of having synchronization influence the flow of information.
Right.
So I was curious if there's any evidence either from your studies of somebody else or somebody else you know of that it is actually the case that if, say, LDC and MPFC synchronize, that then the information present in firing patterns in MPFC are more related to what we know or what should be in LHC rather than in some other area, right? In fact, can you see the consequences of that synchronization at some other level, for instance, like spiking neuron level?
Right. As far as I know, I don't think there's any previous study specifically looking at part, and I'd like to do that kind of study in my future experiments, which records a single unit from the prefrontal cortex and correlate to the local field of potential in the internal cortex, or the opposite way, the local field of potential in the prefrontal cortex and a single unit in the lateral internal cortex. That will be our future study.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Okay, if there are no more questions, then we'll get set up.